Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I know most of you, I think. Some of you I don't. I'm Sid Davis, and the name of my presentation is Holocene Aggradation of the Colorado Plateau. I've shortened it a little bit from the title. The authors are myself, my wife Marie, who's a geologist that works closely with me in my company, our company. Other contributors to this work are Ivo Lakita from USGS and Flagstaff. He's retired now. Bob Finkel, formerly of Lawrence Livermore Laboratory, and Mark Caffey from Purdue University provided carbon 14 dates, and they've also done cosmogenic dating for us on other surfaces out in the Southwest. Susan Smith and Jim Hasbargen from the Paleoecology Laboratory in Flagstaff provided the pollen work for the study. Basically, we're focused on the Colorado Plateau and the Grand Canyon through, or the Colorado River through Grand Canyon and Glen Canyon, and the tributaries. Back in the 90s, we were hired to help out with the Glen Canyon environmental study, which was looking at operation of the dam to see what was eroding the archaeological sites. Whether it was actually the placement of the dam or whether it was the operation of the dam. And so we were contacted by Lakita to round up the soils aspect. One of the side topics that arose was this sand unit that's present pretty much from end to end in the Grand Canyon. And we looked at two sites in detail, Nankoweap Creek and Comanche Creek. Nankoweap's about 50 miles or 52 miles below Lee's Ferry, which is the put-in for rafting through the canyon. And Comanche is about mile 67 or so. They're about 25 miles apart. This is a little Colorado coming in from the east and joining the main stem of the Colorado River in the canyon. Now, the overall signature for the Colorado River is one of downcutting, which is reasonably obvious, I guess. But it is punctuated by periods of aggradation and these buff-colored deposits down where it says Pleistocene deposits are remnants of old river channel. They're well exposed or well preserved in this reach of the canyon, and they're of varying age, oldest highest elevation and youngest lowest elevation. A cross section of a schematic is shown here where the Colorado River is over on the left, and the soils are pretty much fluvents on two terraces, one that's frequently flooded by the operation of the dam, the releases, and another one that's occasionally flooded by the various high-intensity storms out on the in the upper Colorado River, now on the Colorado Plateau, because the dam is withholding the major floods now. But above that, in the Holocene as well, about 10 meters up, is a sand deposit, and it's almost strictly sand. It's entirely devoid of any gravels whatsoever in the through-flowing stream. And it supports a very robust mesquite forest. And the pre-Puebloan people used this feature extensively prehistorically to farm and live on. The Pleistocene deposits are much higher elevation. They're on the order of 30 to 50 meters above. And the age difference between these two, the Holocene obviously is less than 10, and the terrace above it is in the 20 to 40,000 year range. This is a shot of the Uncar Delta, which is just downstream of where we've done extensive work on the archaeological unit. But the Colorado River is flowing this way, just off of this slide, and it meets this drain meets it right at the bottom of the picture. The 1L is the active wash. That's the first surface, and the L means it's localized class and materials coming out of this canyon. The second one up is what is deposited during an overflow flood stage. The third one is actually above the 100-year floodplain in this wash, but it also interfingers with the third level on the Colorado River, which is CR.
There's, Sid,
yes, sir.
A little silver thing on the foyer. That's a laser level.
Bill, did that foyer work? Okay, so we don't have a laser.
I'll just point. I'll point and break my neck trying to get off of this thing. Anyway, over to the left is 3CR, if you could see that. That's level 3 up, and the L3, the 3L, interfingers with that out of this wash. The next one up is the Pleistocene surface at level 4. There's a small remnant of level 5 back there, and then level 6. Well, these are these are climatically induced aggradations from the Pleistocene, and they pretty much correlate with the sixth level would be like Bull Lake Age, the 4 would be the Pinedale, and then 3 is the Holocene. Nankoweap site and the Comanche site, again, we looked at in some detail, and on top of this archaeological unit, this sand unit at level 3, are a good range of artifacts in the way of pottery, grinders, small rooms. And at Nankoweap Creek, you can see the deposit either side of the wash coming out of the uplands. And in this sand unit are multiple buried soils. There's one at about 7 inches, and then there's another one down around 21 inches or so. And there's one even beyond the bottom of that tape measure at about a meter. Now, looking downstream from where we were just punching those holes, the archaeological unit is well preserved along this reach of the river in this position, and it's just above the historical flood level, a high water mark. And this is the archaeological unit at Comanche between the yellow lines. Those are mesquite trees growing on that, and then below it is arrowweed and willow. And above it are the Pleistocene age terraces, the old channel gravels. And you can see the difference in the coarseness of the deposits, where those people are standing off to the left there at the base of that. Those are old river gravels, Pleistocene river gravels. The stones that are laying on the surface have tumbled off of that fairly steep slope, but by and large, the section in this sand, there's just not any gravel in them. This is a prehistoric farm field right here that's now undergoing some fairly severe erosion. And I mean, there's all this work done out in the southwest to preserve these cliff dwellings and stuff, but archaeologically, this is probably one of the more significant sites in the region. A close-up of this sand deposit shows again, multiple buried soils. There are about four or five of them in the upper meter and a half of this one. And if we look at the section down about 20 meters or 20 centimeters over at Nankoweap, we had ages of 340 BP, four present, and then 1420 and 1310. Well, these overlapping error bars are roughly the same age, but we had cotton at about 120 years BP, cotton pollen in this one, and maize down at 1310. Then over at the Comanche site, there was corn or maize pollen laced almost all the way through the profile. And the oldest ages we had on that were about 3160 BP. And probably some farming was happening down around 4460, because this was a pretty thick berry day in that section. Just to put it into context, the Comanche site, the ages were contemporaneous with the Basket Maker 3 and the Basket Maker 2 cultures in the south, in the Grand Canyon chronology, and all the way down into Archaic. So really we're looking at the rise of agriculture at this site from hunter-gatherer tribes to settled agriculture in the southwest about 4,000 years ago. And then Nankoweap, the ages are 410 BP and 560, and it puts them squarely in Basket Maker 2 and 3. But curiously, there's no Pueblo, there's no age for Pueblo habitation in the fields themselves, which is kind of telling us that this deposit probably started to in size right at the Basket Maker Pueblo culture, and it may actually have delimited those cultures where the Pueblo people probably had to go upstream in the side streams to divert water to farm. We looked around in other places at these deposits upstream at Axe Handle Cove, a couple miles from Lee's Ferry. We've seen it down at mile 209 on the river. This is Kanab Creek. There's a very large section in the site, Canyon Tributary, at the town of Kanab. Natural Bridges, the same deposit exists. There's a cave up on the Rainbow Plateau that's clear full of sand. And at Segi Wash, out on the Navajo reservation, the deposit is very prominent, and it's also incising. Axe Handle Cove, which is 2 miles below Lee's Ferry, we had similar ages of 2940 and 4480, and these track very closely to what we saw down at Comanche. The numbers in red were dates produced by O'Connor and associates. And these folks are looking at this deposit as rain on snow events in the Rockies and mega floods, where we're kind of looking at them as a slowly grading rising bed in the Colorado River. I think they're modeling these gigantic floods off of the present day stream bottom, where we see these deposits as being at or near the channel bottom at the time that they arrived in the stack. Looking at the same deposits, two diametrically opposed interpretations of the same stuff. At mile 209, whoop, how do you back this thing up?
Just the other.
Okay. there's the, that level three sand unit in one of the side drains, and above you can see the very stony Pleistocene terrace. And the where that knife is at the top, that's a very prominent charcoal layer. There's one at the top of that shovel handle, and then there's one just above the spade down at the bottom. We haven't sampled and dated these, but we're pretty certain they're going to be contemporaneous with what we've looked at. We went upstream in the town of Kanab. The river is incising headward up from the main stem, and there's about a 20 meter section exposed there. And we described and sampled this, and the oldest dates we got on that down at 20 meters was about 6,700 years. And maize started showing up at about 2350 BP and went to about 900 years. So farming was extensive in this area, and it lasted for quite a number of years through Basket Maker 2 and Pueblo 2. Oak Cave is an alcove that was filled with sediments, and this is at the base of Navajo Mountain out on the Navajo Indian Reservation. And we were surprised to see it. So we got our team together and we went back out there, and we got ages of 11520 at the base of it, and it topped out at about 7280. This number of 1150 is kind of contemporaneous with a lot of mammoth bone finds in the northern Arizona area. That's kind of when they died out, and it's also when this cave started to upgrade. We didn't find any farming sites. Obviously, it's hard to grow plants in caves, but there was a fair amount of archaeology on the top of and inside the cave itself. Just over the next drain, this is the owl drainage. It's called the owl drainage. You can see there's a little sediment package in that alcove, and there's a little ruin right on the top of it. But if you look at along the base of that manganese staining, it's all been abraded away, and you can see where this drain filled completely up and has been completely excavated out. We took a family vacation it's been about 20 years ago now, maybe 25, to Natural Bridges. And in these beautiful canyons up there, there's this same inset sand, fine grain deposit. And sure enough, there are buried charcoal layers in close proximity to ruins. And now this is Segi Wash. We were out there just 2 years ago at Batatican, Navajo National Monument, knocking around a little bit. And there's the deposit, the low sagebrush fields. And you can see it's both sides of the drain all the way up. And this drain was probably, it was all the way filled up with this sand, and it was just a gentle valley all the way across it before it started to its size. And this is a little further down. You can see in this photo down to the right, you can see the buried soils in that. And Batatican Ruin is just up right where we're standing, where this picture was taken from. This is a 1927 shot of the little town of Segi right off the highway out in northern Arizona in 1927. This fellow named Jim Hanks hopped onto a biological trek out to Navajo Mountain with a renowned botanist and biologist named Clyde Kluckholm. And I think he was from the University of Washington, if I remember correctly. But this fellow, Jim Hanks, was designated the photographer on the trip, and he took this picture at Segi in 1927. His son Tom works at the USGS, and came across these photographs when his father died and decided to go out and try to find some of these sites where his father had been and retake the pictures. And he and Bob Webb from the University of Arizona made quite a little trek out here and took a lot of pictures. But this is one that they took. I thought it was pretty interesting. If you look over to the left there, that's the rock that fellow was standing by. And you can see the where the plateau is of these sediments. And that much material has come out of there since 1927. So the signal from the canyon, from the main stem, is headward eroding upstream on most all of these drains. Oops, I'm going the wrong way. I guess just some conclusions and interpretations we can take away from what we've seen as the main stem started degrading sometime before 5,000 and ended somewhere around 700 years ago. We honestly haven't seen the base of the archaeological unit because it goes underwater, and we haven't done our subaqueous survey on that yet. And the data we've collected shows that some of the tributaries started to degrade as early as 10,000 years ago. The local tributaries degrade and interfinger with the archaeological unit, consisting with a rising base level for the whole region. And in our interpretation, that is that doesn't support the thesis that these deposits, these sand deposits in the main stem, are a result of rain on snow events in the Rockies. We don't believe that the side canyon tributaries would know that that was even happening. And if it did, there would be a deposit there for a very short time, and it would be rapidly blown out by the next storm in the region. Far-traveled gravels present in the modern channel and in the Pleistocene age deposits are absent in this sand unit. They're just not there. There hasn't been the energy to carry it. And the main stem aggradation appears to have lagged the tributaries. In other words, the tributary started to choke, and it worked its way, the slug of sand worked its way down into the main stem and rose. And then the tributaries actually rose behind that. And now the incision appears to be have started in the main stem and is now working its way back up the drains. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Our sense is that this is climatically controlled. We don't think it's a result of overgrazing or anything like that. I don't think the pre-Pueblan people had large cattle herds out there before the Spaniards came up. And that's pretty much my talk. And I've got one more slide. This deposit off to the right is a one-time event on the Little Colorado in 1993. And when we went down there with some of the folks in the audience, this was gone. It was just completely gone. And that's as a result of the rising and falling water out of the releases of Glen Canyon. And I'll entertain questions. Doug?
One real quick question. At the beginning of your talk, you mentioned that you guys have also done some luminescence dating. However, I didn't see any of that referenced in your talk.
That isn't part of it. We didn't do it on this sand. The sand unit, we only did carbon ages on. The ages for the terraces, put into a report that we filed with the USBR, and if anybody's interested, I can get you that information. But generally, the low Pleistocene terraces are in the 20 to 40 age range, 20 to 40,000. The next one's up level 5, or 80 to 125, and above that they're 250 to 350, and then the higher ones were so blown out that, you know, we just couldn't get any ages on it. But upstream in Glen Canyon, we've gotten quite a few off of when the, okay, the 20 to 40 age range are stage 2 carbonate soils. The 85 to 125 are stage 3s. They're starting to cement, and they've got softball-sized concretions in them. About 340, you get a stage 4 with a platy top on the calcrete, or the calcic horizon. And then at stage 5, at about 500,000 years old, there's a meter of solid carbonate, a meter and a half. So we were able to constrain the age of the stage 5 calcretes. We had normal polarity in the sediments under them, meaning they're less than 780,000 years old. We did have a couple of 600,000 year ages on the tops of the surfaces out around Bullfrog Basin. And we had argon-argon dates on a basalt flow down at mile 209 that came in at 525, and there had been a stage 5 calcrete develop on top of that. So we're kind of comfortable with those ages. I did talk to Meredith Reheis on a FOP trip last month, and she told me that the carbonate dust that's blowing around in our part of the world is about 30% more carbonate than what's blowing around out in western Nevada. So
that's an anomaly, actually. I've been working with Meredith on that. And it's she doesn't have an explanation for the lack of carbonate in the northern Mojave. It is absolutely a phenomenal mystery. We do not understand what's going on. And it's been several years now that she has triple run that data for the closest data. So that's an anomaly that we're unsure what's going on.
But the carbonate development does show less in similar age deposits, according to them, according to the ages they've gotten. Like what we're looking at, you know, stage 2s and weak stage 3s are over 100,000.
Well, we do have some stage 6 and stage 5 that are upper remnants that are completely less derived. Deposits, and they're stage 5 indurated calcium.
And
that has to be totally dust derived. They're on ice and schist. There's no other source for them.
Age?
Million?
Million?
Half million.
Yeah.
Yeah, at least. Interesting.